Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM, Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. You would like to get a new credit card. Maybe you want to buy a car or even a home. Before you do that, you have to apply for the card or a loan. And those financial institutions are looking at your credit, including something called your FICO score. Well, what is that? Why do we have it? And why is it so important? Well, we have consumer information tonight and experts to break it all down for us. My guests are Joanne Gaskin, Vice President of Scores and Analytics for FICO, and financial advisor Muriel Garr. Lines are open if you have a comment or a question about tonight's topic. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Muriel, thanks for joining the program again. Joanne, thank you so much for joining the program as well.
Well, of course. Thank you for inviting us.
So, before I get into the nuts and bolts of FICO, Joanne, I want to ask you, first of all, I mean, your thoughts about the Fed report that came out just last week from the Federal Reserve saying that Americans have piled on some $40 billion worth of debt in June alone. That's a lot of money. What does that mean for credit scores?
That is a terrific question, because I'd love to back you up a little bit to talk about what are the key ingredients in the FICO score so that my response makes some sense to your listeners, if that's okay with you, because obviously the amount owed is a really large contributor to the consumer's FICO score. So we also take a look at a couple other features within the credit report that are really important, such as how long you have managed credit, what type of credit you have on file, have you paid your bills on time, etc. But this one number that you've talked about, you know, it leads to calculating how leveraged the consumer is. What is their utilization? Utilization is defined as how much of the credit that's available to you have you used, and if we are seeing that there is a higher degree of utilization going on, according to the Fed report, what we will find is it will lead to consumers at a large scale having their credit scores decline. Right now, we're not seeing that in the data. So FICO obtains research data on a recurring basis, and to date, what we have not seen is a dip in FICO scores. It appears that largely consumers are doing a good job of managing their debt through this last period, and perhaps some of the assistance that was provided through the federal government provided for more of a soft landing, so to speak.
Mm. So let's talk a little bit about what FICO, FICO, is. Where did it come from, and why is it so important to someone's credit rating?
Oh, certainly. So, you know, FICO is a derivative of Fair Isaac Corporation, which used the names of Bill Fair and Earl Isaac, our original founders. And so 30 years ago, they had this novel idea that you could use data and analytics to develop a score that would take the potential human bias out of credit decisions and move it to an analytic decision engine. And so that is really what FICO's history has been over the last 30 years, is actually finding ways to not only measure someone's creditability, but also how do we make certain that we can extend that credit to those who can afford to borrow.
Mm-hmm. So why is it, first of all, what's the range? We often hear that you have, you know, bad credit, fair credit, good credit, excellent credit. What is the range? And you know, and for those of us who did not go to analytics college, I need you to kind of break it down for us, please.
Oh, of course. So the FICO score has a range of 300 to 850. And so the higher the score is the score that is more likely to repay obligations as agreed. So anything above that 800 mark is just going to be considered to be excellent. And there's not a consumer who has that type of score that wouldn't be considered to be somebody that a lender would want to extend credit to, unless there's other extenuating circumstances. But if you'd like, what you can do is go to a number of different educational sites that FICO provides. And so number one that you'll find a ton of information on is a myfico.com site. And it's going to have the wheel that tells you how much is an excellent score versus maybe a moderate to something that is low. And it's an opportunity then to find tools in order to determine how can I make changes to my behavior or my credit report in order to get to the target score that I have in mind to get me to my financial objectives.
And I do want to talk a little bit about that too. But Muriel, you know, from your perspective, you know, obviously a banking insider for your career and the like, how critical is the FICO score for when people are applying for, you know, credit cards, car loans, mortgages, and how does it differ from the credit rating, or does it?
Well, first, Harold, again, thank you for having me on the show. I want to go back to a couple of things that you brought up. One, about the amount of debt that consumers have and how that's going to impact, or what impact it would have on their scores. I think first it's important that we recognize during the pandemic that the U.S. savings rate, which had historically been somewhere around 7.25%, spiked to close to 35% during the course of the pandemic. People were saving money because they didn't have any place to go. That was on an average. That does not necessarily represent what was happening in Black and brown and underserved communities. So when you have an increased savings rate, your ability to pay your debt actually is going to increase. And you and I have had personal conversations about that.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have other source of funds that you can draw from, whether it be family members or you have an investment portfolio, et cetera, then your ability to go with the tide is a little easier. That's not necessarily always the case with Black and brown people. A friend of mine, John Hope Bryant, says when white folks get colds, Black folks get pneumonia. So no racial, but it's the reality. It's where we are. So we need to remember that. We also need to understand that the development of a scoring mechanism was put in place ideally to create some parity when it came to access to credit.
Hmm.
Because prior to ECOA, the Equal Credit Opportunity Act, the majority of loan decisions were made by those who were in financial institutions who had lending authority. And we know that financial institutions historically have been the most non-diverse entities. So it wasn't uncommon that a loan would be declined because you're sitting in front of a person that does not look like you, who's got bias because of what they think of you, and you would not get access to credit.
And women, and suffice it to
and
say.
And women, now we ain't even going, women.
No, we yes, I mean, my mother even talks about, speaks about that, and I've heard other, you know, women of a certain age also talk about the fact that they could not get credit cards or any form of credit unless they had the permission of their husbands. But yes, certain, please
or
go
a man,
on.
Or
father
husband,
or brother.
Or
yeah.
A father or brother on the application. Correct. That's in the 1970s. But let's go a little further. That credit score model, which we all celebrated, and nothing's perfect. So let's go out there and say nothing's perfect. And let me clearly state to the listeners who have not heard me, I've been working in the financial sector for nearly four decades. So we use the credit scoring model, but I also have been very active in consumer education around how that model works. But that model was designed to measure activities associated with things that people of color could normally get. How you paid your car loan, how you paid your mortgage, how you paid your credit card. Well, we all know that people of color were more often impacted by redlining, which initiated out of the federal government. We just talked about issues around access to credit for either a car or a credit card. And then when we did get access to credit, the rates were extremely high. And so because of systemic racism, and we people of color are often paid less than our counterparts, then the amount of disposable income that we need in order to curtail our debt is minimal. And so when we look at the credit score model, and we look at, you know, certain things like you shouldn't have more than 30%, ideally 30% or less of your available credit that you're actually using. Make sure, you know, they say pay your bills on time. I tell people when I'm teaching classes, there's no such thing as grace. Pay your bills early. Because you have to understand in this credit scoring model and this whole thing about credit, the ideal, the optimum point is interest, which works on two sides, for you and against you.
Well, yeah, and I don't want to get too far afield because the history is so incredibly important, particularly for underserved communities. But the thing for educating our people now about where we are right now. And how, you know, those who may still have a lot of questions about FICO, credit, and how these things are, you know, how they are manifested. And Lord knows I have.
So you have various FICO scores, and we have a FICO expert that's on the line with us. FICO has numerous models, but the FICO score is based on information that is contained on Experian, Equifax, and TransUnion, which actually compile your score based on behaviors. And FICO then takes an artificial intelligence to come up with a model of what is the likelihood that you are going to either pay on time or default. Is there a difference in those scores? Go and pull your FICO 8 if you're going to get a car, and go and pull your other FICO score, and you're going to see this spread and difference, and you're going to wonder why.
Yeah.
Yes, there is a difference in there. But there are some, just in anything, like there's basic ingredients to any recipe, there are some basic ingredients associated with the score, which they say, make sure that you pay your bills on time. Make sure your utilization rate is 50% or less, somewhere around 30% or less. Avoid judgments, avoid default. Those things should help you in maintaining a score that creates easier access to credit, whether it be them looking at a FICO score or your credit score on an Equifax, TransUnion, or Experian.
So hold on. Okay, so right, I got it. Hold on.
Yeah, so if I could jump in.
Yeah, please. And you've got about a minute before I go to break, and I just wanted to let people know that we are talking about your FICO score and how it works, what it is, what it is not, and the impact that it has on your credit. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. If you're on the line, please don't go anywhere. We will be talking to you. Joanne, go right ahead, please.
Thank you. And so, apparently we have a friend in common in John Hope Bryant, and what he always says to me is, you don't know what to do if no one gave you the memo.
Mm.
So we thought about that, and I'm like, it's so right, because so what we've done is at FICO created a program that we call Score a Better Future. It's a free program where people can log in. We're doing it remotely at this point in time, get information directly from FICO experts about how the FICO score works. And then most importantly is we're transitioning them to not-for-profit credit counselors who then can be their coach to get them to whatever goal that they have. So maybe it's buying an auto, maybe it's buying a mortgage. But what we see is that we're in the business of helping with wealth creation by making certain that the playing field is level and that if we're transparent and everybody has the information that they need to operate effectively in the marketplace.
Mm. I need to take a break, but when we come back, we're going to talk to Tony calling from Bowie, also Tim calling from D.C. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141 in just a bit. But don't forget, you can hear every edition of the Daily Drum Inside segment via podcast on WHUR.com. It's posted on our website after 8:30. Stay with us. This conversation continues in just a bit. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm. That's on WHUR. We'll be back on Sirius XM in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight, a little consumer information for you. We're talking about your credit, specifically your FICO score. What is it? How does it work? My guests are Joanne Gaskin, Vice President of Scores and Analytics at FICO, and also Financial Advisor Muriel Garr. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Tony, calling from Bowie. Thanks for hanging on, Tony. What's on your mind?
Good evening. Hi. So I'm scheduled to retire in a few years. And so a couple of years ago, I started really focusing in on my credit score. And I checked it. It was like 650, but it was not because of late payments. It was like you all were talking about, the utilization and the percentage. So I made a conscious effort to get that down, okay? So I got the score up to like 740, probably the last 6 or 7 months.
And good for you.
I checked my score. I mean, checked my credit report, and I have a credit card with a bank, and I have another one with another bank that I did a transfer. This was last month. And so it zeroed out one and it increased the other. And about a week later, I get a message that my score dropped 85 points. But I found out, I think what happened was the cutoff date for reporting on the one overlapped with the other. So my question is it going to change next month? Because that's the only thing that changed.
Go ahead, Joanne.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the things to keep in mind always is that your FICO score is dynamic. So it's going to reflect the data that's at the credit report at that moment in time. And so what you've just noticed is that you saw a short-term little dip in your score because of that activity. You're going to certainly be able to move your score back up. And so one of the key things that we want to make certain people know is that, you know, just transferring balances isn't automatically going to improve somebody's credit score. So you've noticed that, right? So what we want to do is, though, describe that you want to keep utilization under 30% on both cards if you can. But one of the things that is important is this utilization is calculated across all of your credit cards. So it's not specific to one card. And so that means that it's important to manage it across all of the cards in your wallet. And then also make certain that you don't have any one of your credit cards that you feel like you have maxed out, because that will be something that will also be considered within your FICO score. So I hope that's helpful.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. I appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Tony, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Tim, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
I got a house under first time home buyers program about 27 years ago. What happened was this man has been on your program, Dr. Keaton has been on your program, this man Timothy Watkins has been on your program. Now I got this house only because my credit ran into my mother's credit. when I went to get one house, he wouldn't finance the condo. But when I found the house, he financed. It was under the first-time home buyers in D.C. program.
Okay.
The bank man, he wouldn't finance the condo, so I beat the lady to this house on A Street.
So, Tim, hold on. What's your question?
My question, how can I do anything to help myself? Because I'm in the same situation I was 40 years ago. I have no credit. I don't have anywhere to go. So what can I do?
So you're asking, how do you establish credit?
I don't want any credit. I just want to know, how can I clear my name with credit?
Oh, you know, that sounds like a really complicated personal question. Would it be possible for us to have you provide some additional information, maybe the producers of the show, where we can come back and get back to you with some more specific advice?
Yeah. Tim, the producer is going to get your information, and she can pass it on to Joanne, because I agree, your situation does seem to be a bit complex. And we may not have time to go fully into it, but if you'll let her take your information, we can pass that on to Joanne. But thank you so much. Let me kind of go back to kind of this FICO 101. What is the difference between why do some companies, TransUnion, Equifax, Experian, have different, you may have a different FICO score with different agencies. Joanne first and then Muriel, jump in as well. But Joanne, please.
Sure. So one of the key reasons is that you're going to have a difference across the three bureaus could well be just the data that's housed at those three credit bureaus. So keep in mind that what they have is what's being furnished to them by lenders. And so it could be a timing issue where, the auto, lender has provided the information to Equifax, but not Experian yet, so it hasn't shown up. To also inquiries being only posted to one of the three. So, for example, you've decided that you want to go out and get a credit card, but that inquiry for credit, which counts towards your FICO score, only is reflected on one of the credit bureaus. That could be another reason. So what I always suggest to a consumer, that if you're pulling all three, which is a great idea, of all three credit reports and scores, just take a look to see if any of the information differs between those three credit reports. Because if so, then you've got your easy explanation for why the score is different. And now I will tell you, too, that there are, which I think was mentioned a little bit earlier, there are a handful of different credit scoring models out there. And so, again, if you go to the MyFICO website, we will tell the consumer exactly what is the most popular score or the most prevalent score that's being used by lenders for given credit decisions. And so that's also very helpful, too, so you can walk in to that lender knowing that you're armed with the information about what credit score they're likely to use for making your credit decision.
Muriel?
I would have to differ there because most individuals go in and lenders aren't necessarily going to tell them exactly which scoring model they're going to use, whether it's going to be a FICO or even a Vantage score, which is FICO's competitor, and which is what causes part of the anxiety when lender or borrowers are actually going to get access to credit. And as you've noted, FICO has various scoring models, and those scoring models actually create a different score. There's a scoring model for if you're going to purchase a car. I believe that's FICO 8. Then there's another scoring model if you're going to purchase a car, a home, or for a credit card. And those scoring models do create a level of anxiety. There are individuals, oftentimes we tell people, you're in the consumer education business as well as I, to make sure you're pulling your three reports, you're pulling them at least twice a year, et cetera, and they actually study them. And they see their reports are exactly the same, but their scores are different. And I think it's important that
people understand that when it comes to the algorithms, that all of the information associated with those algorithms not totally transparent to the borrower.
So before right. I go...
So one of the things that we do, and I just want to be really clear,
go ahead.
Is when a consumer comes into the MyFICO site and gets a FICO score 8, we also translate that into every single version of the FICO score that possibly could be used. So here's your auto version, here's your credit card version, here's your mortgage version. So we want to be transparent. And so I think it's really important that we let people know that there is information accessible, that is accessible for free to the industry.
So to that...
But if I, Harold, but you just actually spoke to my point. So we're translating the scores to, okay, here's your auto score, here's your housing score, here's your credit card score. But for a borrower who is not in the industry, they're going to want to know, well, why is there a 20-point difference between my auto score and my credit card score?
That was my question. And to that point, if I may, if I know I pay my bills and I decide that I want to buy a car and I go to my bank, you know, my credit union or, you know, whomever, and I apply and I get turned down, one of the things is, yeah, I want to know why. I want to know, okay, which credit score are you looking at? So if I have to look at all, I mean, it just doesn't seem to be very, very fair. Number two, and I don't know how it is now, because everything is done, I think, is done electronically. But I do remember, you know, when face-to-face, when you would apply for, you know, credit at a car dealership or what have you, they would not let you see the information that they have about you.
That's true. That's correct.
Why was that? If you have already given them your name, address, social security number, shoe size, and firstborn.
Well, now that's a little bit of an exaggeration, I think, in terms of the information.
But that's how it feels.
That's how it feels.
Yeah, and to my point, okay, you're looking at my credit report. This credit report belongs to me.
Well, it's exactly right.
So why won't they show it to us?
I understand entirely why, and so there are some rules under FCRA that involve disclosure of consumer reports and scores, and so I'd be happy to discuss that with you offline.
Nobody is trying to.
So there are rules and there are laws, but what should happen every time if you apply for credit and you are declined, you are supposed to get written notification
right.
from the proposed lender. Then they have to tell you the reasons you were declined. They also have to tell you which report they pulled. And then where the power comes back into the hands of the consumer is then it's not your responsibility. Yes, we're a little upset and hot and bothered, but we need to put that hot and bothered on the shelf. We need to then pull the report that they've noted, which is the reason why we were declined, and we need to review that report to make sure that there are no inaccuracies.
Mm-hmm.
And then, in addition to that, you know, I think we've been conditioned in some ways to take no as no and walk away. Now, if you know you've paid your bills, I'm going to use the example that you've given, and you know that you're not overextended, there isn't some lenders actually have an appeal process. You have a right to go back and ask them to relook at that application again. But oftentimes we become so offended and hurt by the fact that we have worked hard to pay our bills on time and we're going out trying to get something and we've received this decline.
So let me anecdotally speak to this because I remember when the car that I own now, I went to my credit union and this was years ago and I applied for a loan for, you know, a used car, and they said if you have a credit score that was over 750 or something like that, that you were eligible for the lowest score. My credit score at that time was 760. And they tried to give me an interest rate that was higher than I knew, that was higher than the one I believe that I was qualified for. You know, to the point about the appeals process, my appeals process was talking to the lady over the phone and saying, I have a 760 credit rating. Now, you can either give me 3% or 2.24.
And did you walk away with the 2.24?
I most certainly did, because if I didn't, I was going to walk away.
Well, see, most people, again,
don't know that.
So
yeah.
Most people do not know that.
Right.
But the other thing that we're not talking about here that we also need to educate our consumers about, the credit score or the FICO score are one thing, but the other thing we need to understand is credit policy. Wherever you're going to access or get credit from, they have a credit policy that they've set up, and that policy identifies the parameters under which they will actually extend credit. And that credit policy played a role in the relationship or the interaction you had at your credit union. It said, okay, if your score falls into this range, we're going to offer you this rate. If your score falls into this range, we're going to give you this rate. So, yes, we need to manage to the model that Joanne's talking about, you know, make sure that, one, we don't only extend our utilization is not 30% overall, but on each of our outstanding liabilities, that we're not getting a lot of new credit, that we pay pay early, not on time.
Yeah, and reduce your debt. Yeah.
And debt reduction. If we think about the interest that we're paying on debt, is money that we're giving away just for the privilege of borrowing?
Yeah.
Think about it. Yeah. Well, and if we think about that differently, if I can reduce my debt and start using that same interest to invest and save for myself, then I can change what is happening in my whole family scenario.
Yeah.
That's how I can really create wealth.
Let me go back to the phone lines real quick. Kim calling from Virginia. Thanks for calling, Kim. What's on your mind?
Hi. So I am just in a situation where I had, I've never had a steady job or anything until after COVID hit, and I was able to pivot in IT and then finally got a job beginning of the year, or I don't know.
Well, congratulations, first of all.
Thank you. Yeah. But in the meantime, because of all like the side gigs and all that stuff, I just have like so much debt. I mean, it's crazy because I had 2 master's degrees, and so I have a lot of student loan debt as well. I've been like just always flying under the radar. Like I've always had problems with paying bills and whatnot, and so now I'm at this point where, you know, I went through bankruptcy, my car got repoed. It was just like, it's like a bad country song, right?
So yeah. So what's your question, Kim, if I may?
Around, and I don't know like what to do because my student loans are high. And I don't know how to get my score up, and I just don't know how the bankruptcy and the repo is going to affect what's going on with me.
Mm. Joanne?
Yeah, you know, so again, this sounds like you have, I have very strong empathy for you. It is really difficult to understand how to manage all this without help. And so if you, again, can give your information to the producers, if you're comfortable with that, I will connect you with a Hope Inside counselor. So this is from Operation Hope. They're not-for-profit credit counselors who can sit down with you, look at your credit report, and provide some advice as to how to and over what time period you can manage your credit to get to whatever your goal is. You know, and maybe it's just managing your way out of the bankruptcy to have like a fresh start.
Well, let me ask, you know, Muriel, do you have some basics that Kim can take away from this conversation? Obviously, her situation is complex. But
well, it's complex, but it's also dire because I'm also hearing some frustration in Kim's voice because she's saying she's struggling. She's always, you know, flying under the radar and just been able to try to maintain. And one of the things that we talked about on a show that we previously hosted was that bankrupt financial tool. We have given bankruptcy such a negative name and made people feel like they were less than if that became the alternative that they had to take. If your level of finances and the debt that you have is such that it is causing an enormous amount of stress and anxiety, and it impacts your ability to even go out and make money, understand that bankruptcy is a financial tool. Companies use it every day. It is a tool. There are different types of bankruptcy. But the first thing that we have to do is we have to be healthy mentally, physically, and emotionally in order to earn money, in order to take advantage of counseling programs, as Joanne has talked about, et cetera. Bankruptcy is a tool. Do not feel like you have failed because of the inability to be able to manage all of these bills. Understand that you are not alone. And when you're having that conversation with one of the Hope Inside counselors, I've served on the Operation Hope board. I know the process quite well. Be willing to be transparent. And they're going to be willing to work with you, but understand it is a tool. And do not allow anyone to make you feel less than if that is the choice of the tool that you use. If you do decide to use that tool, make sure you use a reputable bankruptcy attorney to actually work through that. Understand that most student loans cannot be bankrupt. So that would mean that debt would need to be restructured in some way. But I congratulate you and commend you for hanging in there and for trying and continuing to try and being vulnerable enough to pick up the phone today and call in on this show. Do not be discouraged. Share your information with the producer, and we'll make sure that we can get some help for you.
Yeah, and you have a job now. You have a steady. I mean, I think that's, the first, step. The income is not as erratic as you were describing, and it may seem a little dark before the dawn, as they say. But I think that is, the best step, that you finally have found a way to bring in some income. Now you just have to figure out, how to manage your credit situation and your finances. And as Muriel said, I think there is time, there is hope. But Kim, thank you. Thank you so much for sharing with us. We appreciate it. And I think, I don't know whether or not our producer, did you talk to our producer, Kim, already? Kim, can you hear me? Oh, she got it. Okay, wonderful. Thank you so much. To the other point about FICO scores and let's talk about young people who are trying to establish their credit. Joanne, I'm assuming, let us say that you have a college student who doesn't have a utility bill, does not have a credit card or something like that. If they put their Social Security information in into Experian or Equifax or what have you, or look for their FICO score, what would they see, if anything?
That's a great question, and really, it's tied to the individual. So, in a sense, we know that student loan debt obligations are overwhelming recent graduates. But one of the things that does happen for those who have a student loan and the student loan in their name, that information is getting reported into each of the three repositories. And so those consumers are going to have a score. And so they won't be credit invisible. And what that means is that you can at least assess what the current credit quality of that consumer is. Now, what FICO has done is recognize that those young graduates and those who are new to country don't tend to have the traditional credit available at the main three repositories. And so we've developed alternative versions of the FICO score that take into account the data that you just mentioned. So telco, utility, rental data. So what we have found is that there is really a lot of predictive data that could help these folk that don't get a traditional FICO score today with us using alternative data or data outside of the credit bureaus. And so I think of it as like a ladder to credit for them so that they can get that first credit card or their first, you know, small personal loan, get experience with that, and then grow their financial future from there.
So
for one of the things, Harold, that they would need to be aware of is if they're a new entrant, that even though they can have a score generated by non-traditional means, they could still be declined for what is called a thin file. And that means that they don't have at least three trade lines actually showing in their credit report.
Hold on, you got to back way up.
What is a thin what?
So what she's talking about is something called a thin file, or meaning that you don't have a wealth of credit information.
Okay.
And it goes to credit policy, again, where if some lenders really want to see that you have a great deal of depth of experience in managing a number of different types of trade lines, and others are more interested in saying, I'm looking to bring in that new graduate, I want new customers, and so I'm okay dealing with making a decision off of somebody who doesn't have a really thick file, but has some information in their file about how they paid their telephone bill, their cable bill, how they paid their rent. So each lending institution is going to have their own policies, but what we've done with the data that is used outside of the credit bureaus is really allows for a greater expansion and access to credit for this very population that we're trying to help.
Let me re-ask.
But we want to be mindful, though, that in that arena, that what we're not seeing and what we're seeing a lot of is college students getting
I need to re-ask the question. For both of you. Because I use the example of college students, but not everybody went to college. Not everybody, and again, not everybody has a cable bill. Not everybody has a utility bill. A lot of people are living at home with their parents, but they have a job. So maybe they graduated from high school. They have no trade history. Am I using the term correctly? What do you see and how do they get started if all you have is a good job? Say you're 20 years old and you've opened up your own hair salon or something like that, and you got a job. You got your CDL and you're working for a company or something, but all you have is a bank account and a salary.
I was going to say, if you have a bank account, that's a great start, because then it is whatever bank that you're using for your checking or savings account is the first place to go to ask for a secured credit card. And so because you don't have credit history, they may ask for a deposit that you can then borrow against that deposit in order to make repayments that get reported to the credit bureau. That leads to creating a credit history. And assuming you can make those payments on time, a positive credit history. The other is, if you're lucky enough, you may have a family member or friend or somebody that has a longer credit history that's positive, that is willing to put you on one of their credit cards as an authorized user. So there's some trickiness about this, so just be clear. The authorized user, typically they're not going to give the credit card to that person unless it's, you know, a family member, you know, that you trust implicitly. But whatever that credit history is on that credit card, transfers to the individual who you've just named as the authorized user. Mm. And so so that happens in many situations where you've got college students or others who are just getting ready to, I call it the adulting period of their lives, you know, where they're transitioning, allows them to start a credit history, you know, in a less stressful way.
Yeah. I only have 30 seconds left. Joanne, I started with you. Muriel, I'll let you have the final word on keeping your credit together.
I think it's important for us to understand that credit is a tool, and we need to use that tool to our advantage. And so be mindful in order for, and credit is also an indication of debt, either that you have debt or you're looking to have debt.
Yeah.
Making decisions on what's important, and we talked about wealth accumulation and wealth transfer, and making sure that if we have credit, we use it responsibly.
Absolutely.
If we're not able to use it responsibly, then we need to actually shy away from it.
Cash is king. I believe you've always said that. Joanne Gaskin and Muriel Garr, thank you both for talking to us. We appreciate the conversation.
Thank you.
That is the Daily Drum for this Tuesday, August 9th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.